Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to a live interview tonight on Prophecy Keepers Radio. When the host says the coast is clear, please call in.
This is Jasa Sagonige,
a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
And we're live with Adam Yellowbird of the International Center of Spiritual and Ancestral Wisdom. And we've got Mark the Badger Borcherding on board with us. And we also have a caller, also from area code 928, no doubt one of Adam's friends. Hello, everybody. How's everybody doing this evening?
Hey, good, good, good. Good evening, Blue Otter, Mark. Is that you, Alan, that's on?
Osiel?
Osiel, yeah, well, welcome. Hey, well, I just want to open up with a prayer this evening, if that's okay with everybody.
Sure, you bet.
Yeah, I want to give thanks to our spiritual mothers, our spiritual fathers, you know, for this day, for those that are listening. For the graciousness to allow us to utilize this technology and communication pieces to support Prophecy Keepers Radio and also continue to share our messages and unite the nations through this form of media. So bless the show, great mystery creator here this evening, and all those that are listening out there, give them courage and strength. Thank you for this evening and this full moon time, and bless it up. Ahoo. So, I want to thank you for allowing the space and time here. I've asked my relative here, too, also Alan Hicks, to join the show with us and to share. Basically, we'd like to, you know, share with you, if we got a few moments here, too, about the International Center in Spiritual and Ancestral Wisdom. And this was created over time, over the last many years, and seeded and founded and brought through the fire in 2011 on 11/11 on the shores of Lake Titicaca in Bolivia, on the island of the Sun. And this was of a council of elders from North, South, Central America. And so this evening we're going to share a little bit about the missions and our work and efforts that we've been doing in supporting the ancestors from the past into the present time. So I want to introduce, if it's okay, Blue Otter, we've got Alan Hicks here too, and he's one of strong backbones and supports with the International Center here.
Absolutely. Hey, this is your show, man. We've got all the time. Just take it away.
Alan, you want to share a bit of your clan, who you are, where you're from?
Okay. I'm Eastern Band Cherokee, North Carolina. I'm from the Deer Clan and Gold Eagle Clan. We're also part of the Southeast Council of Cherokee from Ogwotney. We're part of the Medicine Keepers Band.
You know some of the same people I know. Do you know Terry Miller?
Yeah, I know the name.
Yeah, he's the keeper up at Turtle Hill Dance Grounds, where they moved the Kitua Sacred Fire from Oklahoma they moved on to the Rez first, and then they felt it was being disrespected, so they moved it onto some private property in Walker Calhoun. But if you haven't been home in a few years, you may not have been around that. But and you're a Hicks. That's all I need to know. It's just that last name tells me you're Cherokee.
My great grandfather George G. Hicks.
George G. Hicks,
people on the trail, one of the four.
Yeah, I was going to say he was one of the, there was a Hicks that was a member of the, something called the Cherokee Triumvirate, but was he one of the Western Cherokee chiefs?
No, sort of Northeast. He came out of the, more about a Tennessee, Marion, North Carolina and Tennessee, but originally we were out of the Cherokee, North Carolina.
Gotcha. Yeah,
he
I know.
He was with John, his father and was vice chief with John Ross.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, I think that was Renatus Hicks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, there's two of them. Yeah, there's a, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Pappy Hicks is a good friend of mine. He's the chief of the Jolagi Nadagi, Cherokees of the Land of the Sun in Texas. But anyway, welcome.
Yes.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, also, yes, Alan's the internal fire keeper for the Cherokee and also for us, you know, and for the International Center of Spiritual and Ancestor Wisdom. So the mission, really, of the center, too, is to help preserve the culture, language, sacred sites, and be a focal point and center for that. So we're actually working on creating right now a center over here in Sedona, Arizona. And so that's just getting, the foundation is being built now, and we've been meeting with different authorities and investors and people that are interested in the bigger vision of the International Center here. And our efforts, too, have also helped seed centers in Central and South America. So we've lifted those and got those up and going, and some being built right now with the Queros and the Aymara, people from the Island of the Sun. And the objective of this, too, is to be a hub so that they can share their cultures, traditions, ceremonies along the trade routes and sacred sites. And so we were just in a meeting this afternoon, too, with some of the National Forest about reestablishing the sacred sites, the springs, the waterways, in the local area here in Sedona. And so it's just, you know, it's a slow step. They just 2 days now reopened the government chapters over here. So they were, you know, really put us at the top to be able to have this meeting. And so, and for those of you that are listening too, I don't know if you remember, in 2009, we were on board, I spearheaded, helped put together, along with the Mayan elders and the councils of the Americas, the elders from the indigenous elders from the Americas, the Return of the Ancestors gathering here in Sedona. And so this effort was to reunite the fires between South, Central, and North America. And part of the mission now, leading up to 2015, is to rekindle those fires and prepare the movement again in the migration of the indigenous elders throughout the Americas. So that's on one of the lists of things from between this radio show in springtime 2015. Do you have anything to share? Would you like to share a little, Alan, too? I'd like Alan to share a little bit, being the internal firekeeper, of the importance of the sacred fires, which is connected to our sun in the center of our earth, and the importance of that time of the return of the ancestors, your duties, and then Mark, maybe give a little bit in depth, too, of the efforts and those cosmological dates from your perspectives, if you all give a little bit of feedback on that.
Well, it started back in 2007 when we went originally to Peru. We're along Lake Gaca. That was during the time of the return, before the intern of the ancestor member was the eagle and the condor. And through that, that's where we came to the 2009, which was return of the ancestral memories. And I held the fire eternal for 16 days during that ceremony. And it was intense, to say the least. And we had a base camp that had 450 elders and wisdom keepers from all seven continents all over the world had come together. And so that's a lot of that movement that came through a lot of the earlier work. And now we're at this movement now towards the you know, this April 2015, and looking at the International Earth Day and the gathering of the three birds, the three continents, North, South, and Central America, coming together and fulfilling that prophecy in 2015.
Yeah, Mark, you want to share a little bit, too, about the significance and, you know, the doorways and all your research and efforts, too, over the years, Mark, of what you've been doing. I'm just taking people back a little bit in history, or her story, we could say, some of the Pachamama, or the Mother Tierra, the Earth Mother's movement. If you want to give us a little feedback on that, because you were working with us, Mark, back in 2009 and prior to that, with the prophecies and efforts and the work, and then leading up to now, too.
Well, most of the way I met Adam was through Jim Beard and a friend of his, Stephanie Schwartz, and then that occurred because of one of the white buffalo calves named Miracle Second Chance, which was the second one born in Janesville, Wisconsin. That has obviously a lot of Lakota connections, and a lot of Adam's work is connected strongly into Lakota. And I was kind of guided into Lakota, Mayan, and Hopi kind of connections. Adam's worked with more than that. And so one of the things that occurred that I was given back around 1998 is an extension or a growth using the same geometric patterns and numeric patterns that Creator uses for everything in creation. And those same things applied to the Mayan Zolk'in, I was given expands it and grows it. So that was one of the reasons I met Adam, was because one of the things that happened before that white buffalo calf was born, I had asked Creator for a confirmation or a very clear sign that what I was given was not only true, but I actually recorded it correctly. Well, this white buffalo Miracle Second Chance died in November 2006, and Stephanie Schwartz happened to send me an article about this white buffalo calf that mentioned the birth and the death and the dates. So I looked up those dates, and I looked up the dates in a tool that I have that converts from our calendar into this new Zolk'in calendar. And the first thing I noticed was that the symbols on the birth and the death were the same. They were the Kuok symbol or thunder storm type cloud symbol. And then the birth and the death, the day numbers were only off by one. One of those actually connects to Adam. It's in the same cycle that Adam was born in. And so I'm looking at this on my, I'm reading the newspaper article Stephanie gave, and it said they've hired her owner of farm. Says, is it a coincidence that this little white buffalo calf was both born during a storm and died during a storm? And that's exactly what I'm seeing on the birth and death when I'm looking it up. And I realized at that point that I just got my answer, my sign that I'd asked for. Well, that set off a whole chain of events that caused me to meet Adam, Jim Beard, and go up and visit the Hopi and different people there. And everywhere I went on that trip, there was white buffalo connections. So what I'm going to be doing here now, and most of the birth readings I do here on Prophecy Keepers use both the traditional Mayan Zolk'in and the new Zolk'in. What I'm going to do for Adam's gathering here is look at it primarily from the perspective of the new Zolk'in, because we're bridging, and in this Catan cycle we're in right now, we will be moving very strongly more and more deeper and deeper into the what the Hopi call the fifth world or the sixth sun. And we have one Catan here, 20-year cycle. So on Adam's gathering in 2015 in April 17th to the 19th, I'll kind of look at each of those days. One of the things is there's on the very first day on the 17th of April 2015, it has a lot of heart energy. Things coming out of Shoatol, the dog of the underworld, will be kind of working with it. That's the partner of Quetzalcoatl. And in the story of the prophecy of the condor and the eagle, they also have the Quetzalbird showing up there in the center, kind of helping balancing things. There's a lot on that first day that are going to be dealing with balance, too. This is going to come up a lot in this reading. And also con energy, seed energy, and that's going to connect back into Grandfather Martin. Also to the Pleiades. So that first day, a lot of things having to do with that. Balance, heart, justice. Things here about justice and reasoning. A lot of injustice has been going on. And the seed conglyph for planting. A lot of times that's viewed as a corn seed growing into the ground. The next day on the 18th, we're going to see an 8-2-N or 8 bats here. This particular day is the day that the Mayan daykeeper initiation ceremonies start on. And typically, if you look it up on the internet, you'll see it as 8 bats, B-A-T-Z. That energy. Jaguar energy showing up here, which will bring in mystical things with the jaguar, and also transformation and changing with it. And then also balancing energy again here. And this one, this balance is connected into Hunebku, into that. And it's also tied in with a lot of power of love here. So, and that's typically thought of as kind of, more condor, south, southern hemisphere type energy. The condor being the south and kind of relating to the heart, and the eagle being related to the north. So we're seeing here, so far, a lot of condor, quetzal, and Central American energy, and jaguar energy. Next day, the final day, we're going to see a very similar type pattern. A lot of energy here, southern energy, things having to do with wisdom, opening up paths, doorways. It'll connect into the sun a lot, into the Hal sun glyph. It'll also tie in again with condor energy in the sun, the reason and the justice and fearlessness, and also the balance. And so that balance is the one that's going to connect back into an energy of peace. So a lot of the states that are being seen here seem to be really heavily drawing upon condor energy and also energy in Quetzal and South America. So the colors like yellow, green, and a little bit of black, and just a little bit of white mainly showing up. So, yeah, a lot of overall theme on it is balance.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It looks like you're going to have a lot of condor energy.
Wow.
Well, that's what's in the efforts and the work, too. That's like spot on. This was also decided. I got a call, which I won't put their names out right now, from some of our elders and medicine people. And they said, okay, the spirit said 2015, let's do it now. From our last one that we did with the general public was in 2009, Return of the Ancestors. And so this was a calling, not by myself, in the International Center of Spiritual and Ancestral Wisdom, but on behalf of the movement of the elders and medicine people of the North. So the elders and medicine people, spiritual guides, the ones that stay close to the fire, are calling back Central and South America to come to the North. They're welcoming them back. So that makes total sense to me, Mark, what you shared. And it's really to bring that balance and harmony back for not only all of us and for Mother Earth, but also for the indigenous peoples and themselves, too. And we can do this together. And for those that will participate. I did, if you've got a moment, Mark, too, they will be arriving ahead of time and setting the sacred fires. Like Alan mentioned, they kept a 16-day fire. They will be setting that
prior a minimum of 4 days. Most likely they'll be coming in 7 days prior and then lighting that eternal fire 4 days prior to the 17th, 18th,
and 19th. So that'll be on the
13th then? Yeah, so those will be this is the guesstimated seating times, which will be guided by the elders. So we're looking at that stream of flow, lighting the fire, and getting our...
The 13th is going to have a lot it's going to link back into your birth on Kuok symbol and the thunder beings and the Lakota energy there. It's going to be showing up a little bit. Also, a real strong amount of the Manik hand glyph for healing. Healing especially that has to do with service. There'll be a lot with light. If in the Lakota thing, you know, on the skon-skon or the dual things on the dual light and stuff, a lot with that in accordance with healing. And that's going to tie in with ancestors. There's a lot of stuff showing up here with healing, family, ancestors, and a lot with the Manik, the Mayan hand glyph. And then also some harmony and Hunab Q energy also showing up. That's going kind of more from on a backwards flow of time, what we consider the future going backwards in time. And it's also connected back to the peace energy we heard about earlier. So that's going to connect in quite a bit to that aspect of the balancing. So it basically shows a lot of this, when this fire started here, it's going to be kind of setting in motion the idea of healing, harmony, peace, and stuff like that with the ancestors and family, and I suspect just about, you know, everything across the board, going all the way from South America, all Central America, all the way north. And one of the things here is most of the things happening here in the native world with these, you know, clans fighting with each other and different tribes, Hopi and others, and you know, there's a lot of problems that they have internally with themselves, and then they're trying to do this across tribes, and then, you know, so if this starts happening and the native peoples kind of lead the way, then... You know, other people are going to be affected by that, and they're going to see it, or they're going to feel it and such. So if these things, these gatherings and these connections that some of these people are trying to make and start trying to heal these relationships, not just amongst us right now on Earth, but when these prayers and ceremonies and things are done, they can reach into the past. I mean,
yeah.
We can heal, and some of the ancestors might be sitting there with us helping us do it, you know, and see little orbs or lights or stuff floating around in there or whatever, or just feel their presence. So it's real important here to keep this on the whole complete healing of the eagle and condor and the quetzal throughout time, past, present, and future. Link it all together as one.
That's why it's called the... Yes, I agree, Mark. That's why it's called the Eagle, Quetzal, Condor Confederations Unite, because they were all one confederation. And so they've been separated through borders and crossings and nations and countries. So the spirit has guided in all this to take place to unite those confederations once again here and to ignite that flame here in the north, and they'll continue to take it to Central and South America and beyond. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks like it got a lot of good energy there helping support it.
Yeah, so for those that are listening, we're going to have lots of information coming out on that. I believe within the next 2 weeks we'll be having, things uploaded on our website, indigenousnativeamericans.com. And then I'm sure we'll be back in another time, too, with Prophecy Keepers Radio with updates. And leading up to that, too, right now the pilgrimage has begun starting the beginning of November, some of the elders are making their migration 1, 2, 3, 4 at a time to this November, starting in San Francisco and Thanksgiving, ending up here in Sedona, Arizona, with an organization called Revivalution. And they will be seeding these fires and these ceremonies and making the payments and offerings here in Sedona and this region to prepare for 2015. So if you can see how there's been this movement, and it's actually never stopped, it's been an underground movement for many, many years carried throughout the Americas and around the world of the Eagle, Quetzal, and Condor confederations. And so this is continuing. We have much work to do between now and 2015, many ceremonies here in North America, and in Central America and South America. So we encourage people, you know, to ask questions, get involved, become a volunteer, or take some of these pilgrimages with us. After this elder, the Carros are coming from the high mountains outside of Cusco, Peru, this November, and Thanksgiving arriving in Sedona to light those fires and make those offerings to Pachamama. They will then give us guidance of what the next step is, whether it's to return back to Central America, light the fires and ceremonials there, and then return back to the shores of Lake Titicaca, where the original intention and the original fires were lit for the International Center of Spiritual and Ancestral Wisdom. So in the bigger picture, that if those that are listening, if you can see sort of this this movement that is greater than any individual, self, myself, any of us, that's, it's been a part of the natural world and the flow there. Is there any listeners out there that want to call in? Or
let me, I've been busy doing something, so I make sure, no, we've got everybody online. If you can call in, you can, we're at 347-996-3318. And we're kind of taking a little bit of a break here. I encourage everybody to go to tinyurl.com/native-religion-petition. tinyurl.com/native-religion-petition. Going on is the South Carolina State Senate Bill 611 seeks to deny any further state recognition of Native American organizations. And how does this affect the spiritual liberties of non-recognized organizations? Some state federally recognized tribes seek through intimidation to stop Native religious practitioners, regardless of ancestry, from performing their ceremony by dictating where and by whom these ceremonies may be formed. They hold Native religious practice and spirituality cannot be governed by any recognized federal or state tribe. The Constitution of the United States of America protects individual religious freedoms. Government entities have no governing authority over personal religious beliefs. And in the background, what this is all about is this is about foreign gambling interests trying to move into South Carolina. And the traditionals are fighting them on this. Actually, the Reverend Dr. Craig Talbot is kind of spearheading this. His number is 843-957-3306. But we need at least 150 signatures on this petition in order for it to be seen publicly on the White House website. So that tinyurl, tinyurl.com/native-religion-petition. And we'd appreciate it if I will put that link up on this page that that you're listening to the interview right now. Yeah, there's always some nasty people ready to move in and take the wear rights. This has been going on. This is a fight. been going on for a long time. It's liable to continue.
Yes, yeah.
Whenever. Because money's involved.
It's been happening since 1492.
Yeah. Well, somebody said money never has learned to speak Cherokee. Yeah, the traditional Indians are kind of about that. I know Grandfather Walker Calhoun was adamantly against putting in the casino there in North Carolina, and he says it was just ruined the spirituality of the tribe. And a few years ago, let's see, it must have been 1998, someone was actually watching a television broadcast of a council meeting where people in the tribe were wondering, where's all the money going? And Harris came in to me and said, well, you know, we turned over enough money for the tribe, the East Managed Cherokee, to turn over $10,000 a year to each person. They were getting about $6,600, so maybe that would explain why the purple chief was, had her own Learjet and some other things you can possibly imagine. So, anyway, if you would, we'd appreciate if you'd sign that petition.
Okay.
It's
Adam. Has the elders made any comments on the animals? Because I've noticed a lot of things about, like, they've lost a very large number of moose, and they've had several places where just several hundred deer just dropped in one place, and then also reports, especially on the California coast, which could be Fukushima possibly, but very large underwater things beaching themselves that almost are never seen. So I just wondered if any of the elders you've been talking with, have they been talking about what's happening with the animals?
Yeah, I think this will tie it into the Fukushima, Mark, like you just said. There was a message, there was a meeting of some of the high priest elders here in North America, and also the Pogi that came from South America, Colombia. This was within the last month, and they were very concerned, very, very concerned of Fukushima, that it is way worse than we're being told the general public. And they had pretty detailed information about that, that we're being told that there's, only a certain amount of rods or whatever that are endangered. They're saying it's way more. And they're also stating they came to the north to tell the indigenous people directly to them, because that's who they work with. And this is for all people, those that are listening too. But they said, we have to stop feuding amongst ourselves, our families, our communities, and nations, our tribes, because the spiritual fathers, the sun, and the mother, the oceans, and the ones that hold the spiritual mothers and fathers that hold the Aluna, the grid, are, they're not happy with this. So that's in their cosmology and their movement, from my understanding, is that this kid has a great cause and effect. You look at Fukushima, there's a fire element entity in the sun, and they are, it's boiling. It's very high up, so I could say, there is a lot of cause and effect, not only on animals, that are dropping, and they're seeing that in different indigenous nations, or you'll see it throughout the Central and South Americas, but people just getting, many, many people right now are getting sick and just passing fast. It used to take 3 to 6 years, now you're looking at 3 to 6 months. So I guess the message, too, for the animal kingdom, queendom, mineral kingdom, queendom, and humanity, is that we really purify, cleanse, take care of ourselves, clean ourselves, mind, body, and spirit, and go even more deeper. And
it's about our thoughts. So maybe our spiritual actions, our ceremonies, and the things out there that we're doing, implementing, but our thoughts and our emotions are still running some of the same old programs. So that's another effort, you know, reason why I believe that this gathering will be instrumental, is to come and clear that healing in the ancestral memory as the ancestors return once again to North America, to bring that consciousness or that thought wave or that telepathic communication back, you know, to us. Some of the ancestors, I've been to these villages and in the jungles, they've never left the fires, which the original fires, the original instructions. So that is still going, and they do have, Mark, great concern of they're watching the animals, they're watching the snow peaks melt, and they just, you know, please, you know, the urgent message to humanity is to take care of thy, you know, the thoughts, emotions, and physical bodies here. So that was just recently in the meetings up here in the north with some of the high priests and leaders up here. And so that we've got a lot of work to do, a lot of redeveloping our thought patterns and emotional state of being, not just from our actions, you know, because, you know, we can do a beautiful ceremonies and we do beautiful prayers, but then inside our whole, you know, programs are running. So, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And it's not only the indigenous people or the indigenous people throughout the Americas. We're seeing this from all over the world. And some of the most ethnic and cultures that you would never imagine that are bringing this vision and insight to us from all colors, all nations.
Oh. Well, you do some amazing work.
Yeah. Well, I want to give a little bit more, too, on the International Center of Spiritual and Ancestral Wisdom, if some of those that have just joined or haven't. The center will be a hub of a sustainable community so that we can get reintroduced to the original teachings and bring these original ancestors from all the cultures in, and it's the people that are going to build this. Even though I'm pioneering, Alan's aboard and others are on board to do this, there's other collaborations of organizations, individuals that will come together here in Sedona, Arizona, also in Central and South America to help this broader vision. And so it's not just, we're just following instructions how to move forward. It's not just our individual process and doings and wantings here. And so, we encourage you to, give an email or give a call or get involved with some nature and get back to the roots, you know. Like Prophecy Keeper Radio has all this information. I encourage, you know, the people out there, too, that are listening to, download that, kick in some bucks, some money here to keep this going so we can mainstream this out to the people. It's so much needed.
I can do.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I guess a little bit more to share, too, is what part of the bigger proposals, too, is we have a land acquisition plan. And that land acquisition is to work with the governing bodies in cooperation right now and utilizing the sacred sites lands to, with the natural resources and in harmony and balance that will restore those regions. And one of the greatest things that have come out over the last year to myself that we've been more involved with is how we can, another piece is to gather these artifacts, ancestral pieces, whether they're sacred instruments, matates, clay pots. There's numerous things that have been taken from graves, beads, sacred clothes, things of this nature, the ancestral artifacts
And so what we're helping to do now, too, with the International Center is to have a ceremonial house that they'll come back. This is one of the regions here in northern Arizona. We'll be building this ceremonial house to have these objects come back and then deliver, take those back to the places of origin. And they said that will help heal our spiritual guides and elders and priests are sharing this with us, that this will help heal the ancestral wounds. And all the museums, all the way down to the Vatican, in people's homes, for those that are listening, you might have artifacts and you have them on your shelves. If you don't know what to do or you there's something going on there, please give us a call or email and we'll help. And they said that we've got to feed these artifacts and ancestral pieces and get them out of captivity where they've been in prison and then deliver those back to the places of origin, South, Central America, to the local tribes here in North America. So that's a lot of the efforts that we're doing right now is recuperating these artifacts that just collecting dust on people's shelves. And we'll be working with the local authorities to take those back to the places of origin and the local tribal nations and sacred sites.
Oh, that's long overdue. Yeah. Well, you know what? When the Cherokee Nation of Mexico was recognized for the fourth time since the 1700s, in August of 2001, they opened up their archives of the state of Coahuila to us, and they handed us the original of our treaty with Spain. So maybe we ought to remind Spain that we've got a treaty with them, and maybe they ought to return some of the stuff they took from us. Who knows? You never know.
Yeah, it's a super, super important thing happening. The message came that 2013, 2014, if we began doing this, notifying, we're working on some documents for Mexico, United States, and in South and Central America. Those that are, respectfully put in those positions to help be the ambassadors to get that job done, and the spiritual priest to be able to do that is super key in the bridging the Americas, the healing of the ancestral memory and the wounds there, and for the progression and the healing of the planet. Even they say if we start feeding and returning these artifacts, it'll heal those places and the wounds in the land. Like, for instance, here in South Dakota, we had the Wounded Knee Massacre. So all those artifacts were taken off the battlefield and put in museums. So we're putting a call out now, return those artifacts to places of origin in those regions and to those family lines and to those ceremonial places, and that will heal that wounded, the bloodshed and the traumas of those regions. And you can break that down all the way to the Aluna, all the way to the Earth grid, the ley line system, the grid, and that will begin healing the ancestral trade routes all the way throughout the Americas. And what something that just came up too, I just got the hit too to share this with everybody. In 2008, they came from Japan, the Shinto priest, and came and found me because the shrines and the temples in Japan where the architectural design or the layout for the world in the different sites and regions, and they said there was a call that there was great danger. They were needing help, that things could happen here. So the wounding of that, they kept that. It's actually a map. And so we went over there and did ceremonies at the sacred sites. Many, many others are doing that now here throughout the Americas and around the world. And I think we need to continue that work here, especially as the red, the flag goes up for Fukushima and all the prayers going out for the Japanese people and now affecting the rest of the world. But this is another... It's like if I were to take, somebody's grandmother's her family line, the grandmother's shirt or her bowl that the family wanted. It's been held captive. So this is actually happening. They believe that they will start, even the Vatican and these museums will begin and they'll be open to return these artifacts. And if you're looking on the news, you're starting to see this, artifacts coming back to Hopi. Even Iran was delivering back sacred artifacts and cups, special ancestral cups that they have. The United States stole that when they were in the Iraqi war. This is a natural movement of the natural world that's happening now, and so you'll see it more and more. And so we just ask for those that are out there for the assistance and help and support through this, you know, the radio station, and we're just going to keep building on up to 2015 and beyond.
Oh, well, I understand. I know you're run short on time, and if Brother Hicks would like to hang around, and speaking of Cherokees, if there's anybody out there that has Cherokee ancestry, who for some reason or another, or even if you are politically recognized as a Cherokee, we would like to invite all Cherokee, regardless of whether they can, quote, prove it or not, because blood quantum laws are something that was invented by the Yonega. But I'd like you to visit CherokeeDiscovery.com. The Cherokee Nation of Mexico is a pre-Columbian, pre-constitutional theocracy. It's set up exactly what the Cherokee Nation set up. It's federally recognized in Mexico, which is where we migrated from. It's where we petitioned the United States government 3 times before 1900 to return to. But we have been kept here. And, of course, attracted Stockholm Syndrome, and most people consider this the home, but we're the Kua never considered the North Country their home, and we'd like to invite you, or if you have the heart of a Sam Houston, don't have a drop of Cherokee blood, we'd invite you to ask for adoption into the ancient Ani Kiloe priestly clan, which is the same clan that the very famous chief Akulakula, the little carpenter, who's actually a Cherokee from Canada. Most Cherokees are real tall, and he was little. And but, you know, we Cherokees did things this way for thousands of years until the United States government got involved, started dictating, you know, who's Cherokee and who isn't. And but for thousands of years, being a full Cherokee was a state of mind. It had nothing to do with what's running through your veins. And I'd like to extend that to anybody that shot. And Adam, whenever you have to take off,
Yeah, I'm going to have to cut it short this evening. Blue Otter, Mark, Alan, feel free to keep the show running here. Again, thank you for the opportunity to share the International Center Spiritual Ancestral Wisdom. It's the first time we went on the air with this now, and 2014 is going to be a big year for us. And we'll have more information on the website indigenousnativeamericans.com. All the projects we're working out of the Amazon jungle. We got a project that we want to lift in 2014 down there, and onward you'll be able to see all the updates. And for the progression of the migration of all the movement that's been happening and our involvement throughout the years with the indigenous elders and leading up to 2015 gathering, please, you know, send us an email if you got any questions, information, and look forward to be back on the show here in the near future. Honored to hear you again, Mark, and Alan, it was good to be in ceremony, fire ceremony, before the radio show here. We had a payment offering ceremony that we were giving to the fire. And Alan, thank you for bringing that Eagle staff out there this evening, too, and honoring the full moon and the women and the nations here.
Thanks for calling. And thanks for all the work you do with people. And by the way, I'll send you the HDL code if you want to embed this interview on your front page, so people visiting the page, all have to do is just click it and they can listen to the interview while they're going over your website. But I'll take care of that after the show.
Okay, so thank you for all your efforts. Please send some funding to Prophecy Keepers Radio Show, folks that are listening. Please, 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 let's keep this rolling. My love, one love to everybody. Love you.
Hey, thanks a lot. And Alan, can you stick around for a while, Alan?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, actually, I'm just going to throw out two real quick what you were talking about. You got to remember, Cherokees, we were in 8 different states at one time. We were also part of the Confederated Tribes of the Iroquois Nation, you know. So, you know, a lot of where they get the blood quantum comes from, you know, the scrolls that, you know, when they went through Oklahoma, when we were force marched. And they only look at two of them. Some of those were, some people were in, some weren't. You know, like my ancestors, you know, I have the roll number from On Trails of Tears, but it doesn't appear anywhere in any of those rolls, you know. And they just recently opened up any bloodline in Oklahoma, any, you know. But yet, I think it's a whole governmental thing that set everything up. You got to remember, Tahlequah was the end of the trail. That's where the government said, this is your Cherokee Nation. But, you know, originally we're all from back east here, and you were forced march out of Cherokee, North Carolina when they found black gold and stuff. So you got to look at what is the history behind all this stuff, you know.
Well,
and, you know, I think somewhere we need to reunite ourselves.
Actually, 1721, about 25%, maybe 30% of Cherokee Nation mass migrated from North Carolina back to Mexico. And Sequoia was in process. He went down 3 times trying to find them, and he did find some. And, of course, this also coincided with the war between Texas and Mexico, and because of his brilliant intellect, Texas didn't want a lot of Indians traipsing through Texas on their way to Mexico. So they even though they had a treaty with Mexico and it was after war and they had their own republic, they sent secret agents across the border and abducted Sequoia, who was sick, and they brought him to a very well-known watering hole about 30 miles east of Austin, Texas, and he disappeared, according to history, suddenly disappeared, and what happened was is he got away during the night, and he walked back out and swam the Rio Grande, went back to what is now Zaragoza, Coahuila. It was originally in San Fernando, and there was a lot of confusion over the years exactly, you know, what did happen. There's expeditions over the years to try to find, you know, his grave, because most people believed he was buried in San Fernando, which is Tamaulipas state. But back in the just before the turn of the century, Dr. Charles L. Lowley, King Roger and his family, who had also been looking for his grave for quite some time, just happened to connect with the right people in Coahuila. They had done enough research where they knew description of the Standing Rock gave where they built a small village there, and the family had kept this secret. Sequoia had gone back there, they sheltered him and protected him, kept secret the fact that he's there, and he passed away, and then he was buried in a cave. But he left a prophecy. He said, "A Cherokee child will discover my grave," and he said that will begin the process of healing the Cherokee Nation, because he witnessed the 10 years of bloody civil war the Cherokees fought between themselves. Even after the Civil War was over in 1865, all the nations, Indian nations in Oklahoma, treated with the United States government between themselves that they would have an everlasting peace and friendship, but the Cherokees reserved the right to continue their internecine war. And this is a war between the non-traditional faction, which is about a quarter of the nation of New Mexico in 1721. Then right around 1799, the more Neolithic, non-sedentary, hunter-gatherer type Cherokees, they went to the Boot Hill, Missouri, and they ended up with an Indian agency in northwestern Arkansas, and a lot of them filtered into Texas and joined up with other bands, and some of those Texas Cherokees remained neutral. But Chief Bowles took a commission from the Mexican army, and there were Cherokees that fought alongside General Wool, who was the French general who was fighting under the dominion of Spain to retake San Antonio. And this is little known history. Probably some of it that people don't want to get out, but that's where we're from. The Catua origin story said that we migrated here across the East Ocean anciently and lived on an island off the coast of South America. And oddly enough, recently there was an expedition of some guys decided to row a boat across the Atlantic. Well, they knowing that all they had to do was be hauled out about 150 miles off coast of Africa, and that the currents would bring them over here, that was a good idea, because they were anciently worked for Columbus and everybody else. They had to be rescued, but the boat later washed up right square in the middle of the island of Dominica. Not the Dominican Republic, but the island of Dominica. And if you were to go down and visit the inn down there, you'd see they build their ceremonial houses the same way we do. And if you go east from there into Panama, the Chiriqui Indians are along the coast, build their ceremonial houses the same way that we do. And the pottery patterns used by the Indians in the Orinoco Basin are exactly the same as those in North Carolina. And we're a migratory people, and we always believe that, you know, when a country stopped feeding you, it was time to move. And I know I see on the boards, things are getting so bad here in the United States, I want to leave. And I tell folks, we just happen to. We're being given a piece of property, a square mile to begin with, right at Amistad Dam, which is about 10 miles north of Del Rio, Texas. But it's the community that was built for the engineers and the people who built the dam back in the 60s. But, unlimited geothermal, unlimited water, sunshine, we've got a YouTube channel. You can go to Cherokee Nation of Sequoia, and you can read. You can go to. There's a link to our YouTube channel. You can see Mexican natives using nets to fish right there next to our property. It's right in the base of the dam. As far as safety goes, the garrison of 100 Mexican Army soldiers is about 3/8 of a mile away, and we'd have our own border crossing. And, you know, we can do with it what we please in the process of being transferred to us. But as soon as parkcherokee.com is down right now, for some reason I got to get a hold of the where it's listed. But check out parkcherokee.com, see some pictures of it, and it might encourage you to take a look at possibly joining us. And because you never know if the Floyd Westcrow, Red Westerman, said in a video, you know, talk about Nate processes. You know, we were told we the United States come and go, but you know, if we lose sovereignty, you know, what is Jerry going to do? Mad Bear Anderson said that someday we'd be released from the reservations and we'd go to the hilly country and burn tobacco. And our chief happens to live in the country of Texas, and it's in the hill country of Texas where Sequoia escaped from the Texas secret agents. And Chief Rogers is a famous oncologist. He inherited the field notes of the real doctor who was portrayed by Sean Connery in the movie Medicine Man in the early 90s, and started his all-natural cancer clinic in Mexico back about 27 years ago. And he's kind of a rock star out of Mexico, not real well-known up here, but there's a lot going on. I want to encourage Jerkis to take a look at registrations absolutely free. Register yourself and your family and your spouses, and we can rebuild the ancient Cherokee Nation the way that it always was intended to be. But pontificated enough, now I'm going to go ahead and tell me what you think about all that.
Well, I don't know if it's a reception. I'm picking up kind of shaky a little bit, you know, but I'm hearing a little bit of what you're saying. Juno Luska was another one of the chiefs that has a lot to do with the way the Cherokee and some of the other states and how that developed too, as well as down there through Mexico. So, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, well, of course, you got to remember, it wasn't too long ago, you know, up until like 1985, that, you know, to be Cherokee, being Native was not a good thing, you know, especially back east, you know. And that wasn't about the time we finally got into the phone book, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. And then they started making a move like this with wolves, and there was a whole state of it came out. But it's, you know, in the last two censuses, there's been so many people that are claiming to be Cherokee. It's kind of presenting a threat to the federally recognized tribes. And but there's actually, well, Department of the Interior has contracted with a man named Albert Hobaugh in Canadian Oklahoma to certify the descendants of John Jolly's bands. And they're the ones that migrated to Arkansas and Missouri and Texas and the cutoff date for that would be 1838. But I mean, they preceded the Trail of Tears. They left voluntarily. And they set up a traditional government in northwestern Arkansas and near Harrison, Arkansas. And then when the Trail of Tears happened, when the group arrived, they outnumbered the old settlers, 2-1 government. And there was a 10-year blood civil war, and long story made short, the old settlers never got payment for reimbursement for moving to West Mississippi. And that's the reason why the Department of the Interior is interested in finding their descendants, is because they were paid. And this all was something that was put in motion by Tom Jefferson. So there's some really interesting things going on. I remember Rolling Thunder used to say that the history of Native America would be completely written in your lifetime. You know, he pointed to me. Of course, he passed away in 97, but boy, there really have been some big changes, and there's a lot that are for and there's a lot that are against it, but it seems and there's some really nasty fights that go on too, especially people that have cards and they don't have a clue what it means to be Cherokee. And they just want to... No, go ahead, Ellen.
Yeah, I hear you. I was just agreeing with you.
But we hope to restore some.
I think, we all, I just say we all answer the Creator in the final day of judgment. Either the way, That's all I could say. Karma comes around and bites people, I it's just the governments, and I really don't want to get a lot of the thing, but, part of it has to do with the governments. But, we've had it for years. Black Coats was another one when all the religions came in, and a lot of our ceremonies went underground, one of the big ones, they talked, I don't know if you're familiar with what we call the Nadosh, and when the Black Coats came in, they said Nadosh, that was the Hebrew word for serpent, and we're worshiping the serpent, and that had nothing to do with, it was more of the potlatch, where we're bringing in all the for a storm for the winter,
I don't know where they get
that winter, So it's just stuff like that's been going on for years,
I don't know,
it's just, a lot of it's not in the history books, and a lot of it, but they got to look at things, the reality, we know the reality, we know how things are, but the way I just look at it, whether you want to call you, Galilee, or I don't want any, either way, we're still peaceful people, and it's either way in that direction, it's what's in your heart, and walking in your heart and walking in the way of ceremonies and that with Creator is what it is. It has nothing to do with, really so much about your skin or your blood. It's the fact that that's the way that's the teachings, and that's how you walk. I just walked up. Well, I just walked that hollow bone way, and I just answered the Creator, and that's how it is,
Right.
Like Adam talks a lot of ceremony. I do a lot of ceremony. I do fire. A lot of my teachings and a lot of my visions and my question is with the fire, And I see the fire, and I see the visions, and I hear the fire speaking. And when I do the lodge, I hear the Wakans, the ancestors speaking, through that fire, through that image.
Hey, Mark, you around?
Yeah.
Why don't you run Alan's Mayan day sign, see what you come up with.
Sure.
Never done it, have you? Okay. I don't know whether anybody that comes on the show would like to. Well, maybe a little bit of background. Carlos Barrios, a lot of people have heard about now, but back when, before anybody knew about him, a friend of mine, Lenach Katua, a friend by the name of Robert Shrewsbury, friended him. Robert moved to Mexico, down into Central America, and we came in a position in Nicaragua right before the Sandinista Revolution, where the Miskito made their chief. And they had him and his brothers out, and years later they said, "Well, we want Yankee know-how." So his couple of brothers, moved back to Nicaragua, but he knew Carlos, Carlos, you know, wrote the what was then the one and only book on Mayan astrology. It was written in Spanish, and Robert introduced me to my Mayan day sign back in 2006. And I'll tell you, you know, my life hasn't been the same since. It's amazing what's happened to me, and just because of learning about this. Mark, I guess we didn't get Alan's birthday, did we?
No.
Oh. What do you want, my birthday?
Yeah, where were you born?
I was born in Greenville, South Carolina, and it was August 6, 1956.
August 6, 1956.
What was the day again?
August 6, 1956.
Okay, got it. So give me a second, and I'll have it here just to figure out what's going on here. I'm going to give you a couple of them here. I'm going to give you your first reading will be is if you had a traditional day keeper with the traditional Mayan quiche day count, what they would give you. And then I'll do another one, it's a little bit expanded one. Remember earlier I said I had an expanded Zolk'in. So I'll do it both. But the first one is just a traditional. And in that one, you were born on a day that's called Five Malak, or in the quiche, Five Taj. And that's the five number has to do with kind of elevating in creation. It would go with like the fifth element, the ether, and things like that, you know. So you might find that you might tend to gravitate a little bit because of that towards the center of the medicine wheel. It partners kind of with things that do with you know, like tops of pyramids and things. And it's the symbol that's associated with the color red, so in the direction of the red. And it's also has energy that has to do with karma, offering payments, and also fire. So it sort of fits in with what you're doing. It would also connect into what the Hopi call the Day of Purification.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a little bit of things there. And I'm going to switch gears here. I'm going to give you one that's a little bit more complicated. It's going to have a forward, a backward flow of time, and then where the two time flows come together, a unity or a zero point part of the flow. So on the forward one, the energies relating to your birth have to do with joy, forgiveness, things with Creator. Now, harmony, charity, and doing things now, equality, and balancing things. So that's, and it is also going to relate more towards the center of the Mayan medicine wheel. And it's going to connect, actually, remember earlier when doing the reading for Adam's 2015 gathering?
Yeah.
This is in the same cycle as that, just a couple days later, actually. So it's going to be connecting into the energy of that particular gathering in 2015 as well. And a big contribution that you have in there is the things about healing and forgiveness. A lot about, you know, getting people to just sit around and forgive all these different things, screw-ups that's happened and mistakes, and just, you know, outright greed and corruption that's occurred on the planet. So that you could probably contribute quite a bit to that. So that's on the forward flow, going from our cycle to the next cycle in time, what we normally think of time.
Can I mention something on that one?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Yeah, we were talking a couple of days after, you know, because where I'm looking, I work for the Yavapai Apache Nation, and right now I'm working with the tribe, with the elders and culture department to have the tribe host a couple of those days that, like, 7, 18, 19, 20, right there, right there on the tribe, on the nation, with the elders. And so I have a kind of like an international Earth Day event right there, and that's kind of like where we've been in the planning process of working through that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a couple of days after, you know, the event that's going on around here in Sedona.
Yeah, that's going to, that particular timing that you're talking about is really going to connect to your birth.
19, 20, 21, I think it is, 19, 20, 21. I think those are the dates we're looking at.
Yeah.
What nation are you working
with?
Yeah,
your birth energy is going to show up in that same time area.
What nation?
A lot of it,
the
overriding thing about it's going to be a lot of thing about balance and a secondary part energy here of truth. Truth and balance are big parts of it. So those will bleed over from that gathering. And actually, whatever you do is going to backflow to the gathering too, because remember, time goes both ways. So whatever you do
yes.
in yours is going to go back and affect the gathering as well. So now, talking about the backward flow, we'll go do that part of the reading. And this connects into Blue Otter because you have a 15 Eek sitting here. His is a 9 Eek, so you have Eek energy as well. And that is so you may have noticed this type of energy maybe getting stronger. It has to do with a lot to do with light. Same thing I was talking with Adam about earlier, about the spiraling light, the sconscon in the Lakota terminology.
Okay.
That combined with spirit, prayer, and transformation and things, and also combining in with ancestors as well. So this type of, I would think that, you know, probably in the last, you know, 5, 10 or whatever years, these type of aspects probably maybe gotten a lot stronger and you get more energy in these types of areas where you're working, learning spirit, prayer, and how that works with the lights that Creator uses to actually form reality. And as that changes, because it doesn't just stay the same all the time, it fluctuates and changes. So you have probably a good capability of doing that. And I've heard you say a lot of things that sort of fit in with this as well already in your talk here. Now, where these two come together, we have another energy where these two come together, and it's actually connecting back. If you've ever looked at the Aztec Sunstone, have you ever seen that?
I've seen it, yes.
Okay, if you looked at the world, the fourth sun, it's called Four Otto or Four Water or... that's connecting here. So you apparently have something that's connecting back, and that was the sun that ended in a flood. and the Cherokee have a real, as Blue Otter often says, the Cherokee have a real thing about floods, staying on the high ground. So this seems to be like this position where it's balancing these two flows of time in the center there. It's appearing to me like this is saying that as you move between world cycles and ages here, what you're doing is forming a bridge and actually connecting back to that, too. So if you looked at that particular thing on the sunstone, it's on the bottom right of the suns. You have the first sun, second, third, fourth, and the center, fifth. So this is the fourth. And it's so... And that also has to do, it's the same type of energy and symbols, the one we did earlier on your birth, And it, so it's also carrying some of that purification energy to it, and it's also connecting into this manic energy that we talked about Adam when they were lighting that fire a few days earlier, about 4 days earlier from the gathering starting. Okay, that's, it's going to connect into that as well. So that's in kind of a nutshell. So I think that you know, that's the thing to keep an eye on this is probably one of your main purposes in all focusing all this thing is have an aspect of purifying things by kind of doing things the right way, spirit, prayer, forgiveness, teaching people that, healing, and the
that's
power.
What I do right now every day. Every day I do that. I work as a behavioral health professional for the tribe.
Power of synchronicity and movement and thought all working together, too.
Yeah.
Interacting with dimensionality and the formation of reality will be part of this part where these two time flows come together. So that's kind of your gateway or bridge from between worlds. So, but you might contemplate that, just meditate or think about it or pray about it, about that particular one that's on the Sunstone to see what that, you know, see what that connection is with the past world cycle and past suns, because there appears to be some connection here between this time and last time for you, anyway.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here reading the letter that your ancestor wrote to John Ross as they were getting ready to depart from Mount Creek on the
Trail Spears.
It's really interesting. Would you mind if I read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is dated November 4th, 1838. It's from George, Vice Chief George Hicks to John Ross. It says, "Dear sir, we are now about to take our final leave and kind farewell to our native land, the country that the Great Spirit gave our fathers. We are on the eve of leaving that country that gave us birth. It is the land of our sons, and it is with sorrow that we are forced by the authority of the white man to quit the scenes of our childhood. But certain necessity says we must go, and we bid a final farewell to it, and all we hold dear east of the Father of Waters, the majestic city. From the little trial we have made, and start to move. We know that it is a laborious undertaking, but with firm resolution, we think we will be able to accomplish it if the white citizens will permit us. But since we have been on march, many of us have been stopped, and our horses taken from our teams for the payment of unjust and just demands. Yet the government says we must go, and it said that you must pay me. And if debtor has not the means, the property of his next friend is levied on, and yet the government has not given us our spoliations as promised. Our property has been stolen and robbed from us by the white man. No means given us to pay our debts. Application is made to, as we think, the proper authority. The agents of government and the commanding officers of the military, the one says, we have no jurisdiction over anything, only such as happen in our own sight and our mile around our agency. And others say their hands are tied. It's the 23rd of May, 1838. They could give us no assistance. Yet they have the power to force us off and any delay is made farther than what they may think necessary. They may not think it necessary to delay any time to try to recover our property robbed of us in open daylight and in an open view of hundreds. And why are they so bold? They know we are in a defenseless situation, dependent on the government for protection. Yet they know they've denied us that protection. And it made their breakfast at General Scott would not intervene on our behalf. Therefore, we will have to leave our property to the hands of whoever may have the conscience to rob us of it. And those appear to be plenty since the protections have been denied to us. Debts that we honestly are willing to pay, provided we're able, would have been provided the commissioners had given our just dues, valuations, speculations, etc. But there have been few, comparatively speaking, that have drawn anything off. Nothing more present. The health of the people is as good as could be expected. We're getting on very well considering every circumstance. I have the honor to be your very humble servant, signed George Hicks. And so the Cherokee sold, well, I believe it was 12 million acres east of the Mississippi. And as I recall, I may have the figures wrong, they were $5 million in gold for it. But they didn't get that money for over 10 years. And in the meantime, Cherokees, they're allowed to go out and pick land. A lot of them just because, they didn't have money for seeds or animals to work it. And in the end, here comes the Civil War, and John Ross has himself ducted along with the Cherokee treasury and goes to Philadelphia and never returns.
Yeah.
So, and why the people in Tahlequah keep such a big hero, I will never understand. I will never understand that. But that's the only friend that the Cherokee had along the way, they knew that if they passed a homestead that had an outhouse with a crescent moon on it, they knew that those were friends of Cherokees. And I didn't know that till Chief Rogers told me that's the origin of the moon on the outhouse. He says that was that we're here, we'll help you. And it's just unbelievable of the extent to which people know. And, five years after removal, one of the Cherokee senators rode back to the country in Georgia, forced out of, only to discover that the whites burned the land out because they didn't know how to farm it, and they moved on, and the entire country was just weakened.
Yeah.
And still stuck. Yep, I'm still here.
I just kind of breaking in and out. So, I'm standing outside trying to, making sure I get a good reception. But I don't know, it's my phone, your phone, or something. It's just the reception's not good, that's all.
Yeah, so, it might be Skype. So we can hear you real well.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I thought I'd read that to you. And
Yeah. Thank you.
I guess your people eventually, they walk back east, and so you were born back east. Huh?
Well, some of it was, because they did, and some of them actually ended up staying. They escaped up into the hills,
Sure.
And that was a lot of the Wild Potato Clan. They a lot of went up that way, and that's where they lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see these other clans. Like you're talking to, they're two clans that joined together. So some of them joined forces together, and so it's just the way things got split up. But,
yeah.
A lot to do with where you were by clans and where you were by with certain societies within that.
Yeah, according to,
and that also has to do with some of the songs and the dialects, they
yep.
say three, but
yep.
actually there's four dialects of Cherokee, but that's easier to say. And,
yeah.
eventually all the former clans, they all kind of did join into seven, but, each of those clans had three or four clans behind them, and it had to do with, survival of the people.
Well, John Red Hat was born in 1830, and he passed away few years back, but he was raised by two Keturah full-blood grandmothers and a freedman. And he said that they pronounced Keturah with an R. Well, Chief Rogers...
We don't have R's in our vocabulary or words. There's no R's.
Actually, the Cherokee Nation has finally admitted, and this is after 10 years of me beating this drum, there was an R, and Chief Rogers beating the drum that the M and R speakers were the ones that left in 1721. Now the Cherokee Nation finally admitting that the southern towns had what they call a liquid R. So Keturah would be pronounced Keturah.
Yeah.
And they're finally admitting it. And the East Man recently made a video claiming that the Aztecs and the Mayans were our descendants, which is interesting. Because we've been over here in this hemisphere a long time, and some of the interesting information about how Hernan de Soto, when he came into our country in 1540, he discovered that there was blonde-haired and red-haired Cherokee children running the streets. He said... And when Columbus got here, the people that met him, some of the people along the coast in Panama, he said they looked just like his soldiers, the same variations of skin color, hair color, and eye color, and they had a written form of communication. And the History Channel, within the last year, actually did a show on that writing system. So a lot of this stuff's coming out, and Cherokees are finding out. And by the way, according to the Chronicles of Oklahoma, which is written like that in the 30s, they said that what was translated as Wild Potatoes Clan should actually be the Tua Clan, which would have been... the original clan, which would and they were probably the remnants of the people that stayed in North Carolina rather than go to Mexico, because there were families that chose not to go, and then after the Koi went to all that trouble to go and find them at the base. The lost Cherokee, the base of the Rocky Mountains, in 1860, after his death, a letter arrived in Tahlequah saying, this is the little Onaheeny manuscript, and it's a memorial from the people that said, you remember us? We are the ones that left in 1721. We're at Lake Chapala near Guadalajara, and we're preparing to move further south. And what's really interesting is you have people like Chief John Brown and others, Cherokee Dr. Long, and a whole bunch of others received political asylum, or what they call amparo, amnesty in Mexico. And Cherokees were miners. They got the mining business, being very wealthy. So you've got people who are part of the PRA. They've been running Mexico for a long time now. Some of the rich, wealthy families. And we've got some friends in Mexico. The governor that signed our recognition, Governor Coahuila, is now the number four man in the government of Mexico. He's the Secretary of Agriculture, and these guys, they know they're Cherokee. And it's not like it is up here. They loved us down there because we served as a buffer between them and the Apache and them and the Comanche, because the Apache and the Comanche wouldn't fight us.
Right.
They had respect for us, so, you know, we're the ambassadors, and we knew how to do things. We knew how to farm. We were productive people. We weren't belligerent. And we wore turbans with three feathers. We wore the turbans so the white man wouldn't kill us, and the three feathers so the Indians wouldn't kill us. And we adopted the high trapper type moccasins that, you know, like you wear in state country. But I didn't know how much you knew about the history of you know, what went on in Texas and Mexico. And you know, if you'd ever
see, most of my understanding is more up north, you know, how we came up through the north and we're part of that original, you know, great nations up there, and how we migrated down and back and forth. I knew we did have some down in Mexico, and it went even on down, you know, part of the Aztecs, you know.
Yep.
So I'm very well, you know, but I, you know, I hadn't followed so much that, but you know, I knew it existed. You know what I'm saying? But then
yeah,
also,
we lived alongside
them. Even with those with Oglotny, Georgia, you know, which is another kind of whole other ball of field down there too, with some of the ancestors there. So, you know, I mean, we're spread around.
Oh, yeah, we're the largest tribe in the world. There's Tim Jones, who's a Cherokee, has a double doctorate in LG, estimates there's 6 to 10 million Cherokee descendants worldwide, and those are the descendants of about the 50,000 that survived the smallpox epidemic. So there's, you know, we're the biggest tribe in the world.
Yeah, I know that.
But there's a lot of us, and you know, we get laughed at, and but
well,
you know,
I get used to that too, you know.
Well,
I have big shoulders. You know what I mean? I'm not bothered by other people's opinions.
Well, Redhead kind of said said, well, now Ed McGaugh's written 7 or 8 books on Lakota spirituality. He says, if a Lakota ever gives you any BS, he says, just remind them of how the Cherokee ran them off of, you know, Long Island, South Carolina, ran them out of the plains. And he says, that'll shut them up. He says, then they'll just start laughing and you'll be friends. And, but you know, back in the 50s and 60s, Cherokees were more interested in and you know, studying and dressing like Cheyenne and other Indians, adopting, you know, the northern dances and songs, and we got down to a point where there was just one old Awehi, and he taught one apprentice, That old Ottaway, his name was Elmer, I forget his last name, but you know, before 1900, you know, most of what was practiced as Cherokee religion, the only parts that were real practiced were, you know, the negative parts of it. And but those things are taught, and of course, Perry will tell you, you know, he's taught how to defend himself spiritually, but he only uses things. There's a lot of witchcraft going on and conjuring, but slowly we're coming back.
Well, you know, even at that, we were part of the negotiating down there, doing before, you know, when they had the little bighorn, as they call Custard, you know, because we were with Crazy Horse, you know, and negotiating.
Sure.
And so we were actually there, but see, we didn't partake in that battle because it kind of wasn't our battle on our land, but we were there during that, trying to, you know, negotiate, because remember, that was a time that actually a lot of the Crow Nation was coming down, stealing the, you know, hunting and lands, and we were all having trouble. So we were, uniting to kind of end that raiding that was going on at that time.
Yeah, well, the Chickamauga, after Chickamauga wars were over, a lot of them moved out on the plains and joined up, particularly with the Dakota. And you could trace a lot of it through surnames, because the Davis surname, Jefferson Davis was the son of the Pocahontas, and Davis is a very common surname, not the most common surname among Native Americans, and among whites it's Smith, Jones, Johnson, and Anderson, but I think among Indians, Davis is number one or two. There's President Andrew Jackson's address to Congress, regarding removal. I mean, he named all the places that we were. We were in Nebraska and Iowa and Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
And we were strewn all over the country. And there was any place where there's a place name, people laugh at me, when I see that Pocahontas was a Cherokee. Well, let's just go to the Gilchrist Museum, and there's an exhibit there that says her mother was a Tula woman by the name of Amotuski, and she married Powhatan, and formed the largest confederation of Indians that ever existed. And that's the reason why the Pocahontas Society in Oklahoma. But people forget, and what they don't know, they laugh at. And but we're making some ground. We've got there's things that are happening, and I really would like to get you on the phone sometime with Terry Miller. Terry is the keeper there, it's about 10 miles north of Asheville, North Carolina, where they moved the fire to.
My relatives are buried up there in Marion, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Well, mine.
Yeah.
There's actually a place up there.
It's called Hicks Chapel, is what it's called. And a lot of my ancestors are buried in that cemetery. And it's right there just out of Marion, North Carolina.
Yeah. Well, was raised. Why, I was in my genealogy. I was told, who my Cherokee ancestors were when I was 16. And but I had a dream in '84, and I was this guy in this dream says, "When are you going to do something about Gardner Green's genealogy?" Well, he was an old man, and he had followed Boone to Kentucky and then to Missouri and came back in 1835, and is got on the 1835, which this immigration roll is really what it was, Henderson roll.
Mm.
Passed away after that, but there's by 1900, I think it's about 1500. There's a lot more now, but. Then you got people like David Corn that said, "Oh, Gardner Green was a white man," and well, shoot, I don't know what to tell you. I just kept moving forward, and I knew I'd hook up with family, and after a few years, I discovered a man in Florida who grew up in Alabama. And he was his cousin, and he actually knew the names of our ancestors back to 1500, and they lived a place called Shooting Springs at the base of Chungale Mountain, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been lucky. And I want to encourage anybody that And you get information through spirit also. My second wife was Cherokee. You knew that she was part of the bunch, the White River Sacred Cherokee that went to Northwest Arkansas. Knew her grandmother was a plant woman, But my first wife passed away, and I married best friend and Betty. And Betty didn't have a lot of permission because her mother Cherokees. Grew up in northeastern Arkansas, played on the battlefield, and didn't think much. And it's kind of moment that she knew were punks. And but 5 months after my wife died, her brother died, and we all went down for the funeral, and we were all sleeping on the floor of Betty's mom's house. And just as the sun was coming up, I heard Richard's voice, and he kind of laughed, and he says, "Well, I guess I'm dead." And he laughed. He says, "Tell Mom we're Pink Cherokee, Pink Clan on the Cherokee side, and we Sword Clan on the Celtic side." Yeah. So started looking into the Larkins, and the Larkins come from the old Orkanes, the oldest Celtic clan. So, you know, and, you know, this is the time of Bible talks about restoration of all things. The Hopi prophecy talks about, you know, the restoration of all the old medicine societies. And so I want to encourage
our papers and records, you know, down on that dam, bottom of the dam down there, Old Butler, Tennessee, you know, when they flooded
yep.
it, you know, when they. And that's where a lot yep. of ancestors, that's where I had a lot of relatives down that way, too. We had a lot of our teachings and our, and it was all in there, you know. But then when they flooded that, you know, it's just, you know, they're at the bottom of the dam, you know.
Did you know there was an old prophecy, the old-timers, 100 years before that, said that someday they would look up out of their graves at a sea of glass. And, yeah, you know, when you're at the bottom of a lake left, that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
But, you know, Cherokees were blessed. Well, John Red Hat, when he was a teenager, converted to Judaism and became a Reform rabbi. And when he learned about Judaism, he said that he believed that, you know, somehow there was an infusion of Hebrew blood. He says it was actually Abraham, the third wife of Abraham. His name was Keturah, and like Abraham sent away Hagar and her son, and if you go and ask a rabbi, he'll tell you that Abraham knew where they went and visited them, you know, once a year. But Keturah and her two sons were sent away and were supposed to be skilled in herbalism and shamanism. And that really fits. But, you know, somewhere along the way, there's some kind of a connection, you know, all the old story that we migrated. If you get a chance, 2 weeks ago in an interview called Ancient Cherokee Marine Voyages, and you can listen to Brian Wilkes and Dr. Rogers talk about where we may have migrated from. And why we have memories of Atala and other places. It was a fascinating interview of a couple of guys that had done a lot of research, and when they put their notes together, they discovered that they really put more of the picture together about exactly how Cherokees got over here. Yeah, in the 30s, there was a Harvard University professor that came down and he looked at our burials, and he says our people, the skeletons of our people look completely different from all the other Indians in North America. says, you know, and he says, us in the creeks, were basically the same people. And he could tell that from the head shape and the height. He says, and we more closely resembled, you know, people from Northern Europe than we did of any of the round, moon-faced, Asiatic, you know, type people, you know, so.
Right.
And if you get a chance to watch either Ice Age Columbus or 10,000 Years B.C., which is National Geographic and History program about how the migrations could have happened 17,000 years ago when there was an ice bridge, you know, from southern France all the way over to Newfoundland. But so anyway, well, time's growing short, and appreciate you coming on.
Well, you got my number, right? So you can always this number. I guess it displayed on your number.
Yeah, I'm gonna
my cell phone. So we always sometime other talk later. You know.
Absolutely, yeah, I'll make note of it right now, and.
Maybe get a little clearer, because I know this has been, I don't know, kind of sketchy breaking up, you know, but I got things to do. I've been sitting here just by the fire, keeping the fire going all this time, so I think I need to get out and get a little more firewood to keep it going. But
I figured you guys, you sounded like you were outside, so. Well, we'll let it go. Appreciate you. And Mark, you got any parting comments?
Nope.
Just listen. Okay. All right. Well, we'll let everybody go. Thanks for listening, folks. We have another interview Sunday night with Nicholas Brink, and we're going to be talking about his book, The Power of Ecstatic Trance. And that Sunday night, that will be at 8 p.m. Eastern, Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 o'clock Pacific time. So, good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas Mojo. The very sexy, very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby. Yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Blueotter speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter. It contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
some truth of other times. Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper. Thank you.